If you could trade a bench warmer for the greatest of all time, you'd do it, right? Get your business a game-changing pickup by choosing the commerce platform with the internet's best converting checkout. That's Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you possibly need to take control and take your business to that very next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Ranks squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week at a slightly different time, dropping a little bit later in the week because of the festive schedule. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. We hope you had an incredible holiday period and that you all had lots of fun. It was merry and bright and enjoyable, and I'm joined by our transfer and Christmas guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm okay. I'm not sure I'm merry and bright, but I am happy and I'm here. So that's good. It's been a good Christmas period here for us in England. Yeah, I found out from Taylor, actually, that in America, you only really wish people Merry Christmas on Christmas. Otherwise, it's just happy holidays always, and always has been her whole life. It's like you always say happy holidays, and then Christmas, you say, oh, Merry Christmas on Christmas Day, which I didn't know.
No, I didn't.
I'm pretty sure all the years I've been going to America to see people there, I'm always just like, oh, happy Christmas, everyone. Happy Christmas. Because here, that's just what it is.
Mid-November to mid-December to mid-January.
Yeah. But obviously, it's not everyone celebrates Christmas. It's not just about Christmas. It's a holiday. So happy holidays, everyone. Yeah, I had a good one, mate. A very good one. Did you?
I had a lovely time. Lovely time. Very enjoyable. Saw lots of family. Had lots of fun. Everything was great. First,
get any good presents?
Engaged Christmas.
Oh, yeah, engaged Christmas. Yeah, you're still together. Exciting. Get her a good present. Together. Will she get you anything?
Well, I got a ring in November, so that was basically
that's not a present.
That's a present. That's a gift. Her gift is that she gets to spend the rest of her life with me. So that's pretty exciting, I imagine. Wow. It must be a pretty cool thing to know. So yeah. Even you haven't got that security. You spend most of your life with me.
Oh, mate, we'll still be sat here, 70 years old, ranking stuff.
I hope so. I very much hope so. Today, we're going to be talking about some transfers. We're finally getting into the groove of transfer season. Dean, it's your time to shine, as they say. We're going to be ranking a couple of the most prominent rumours ahead of the window opening.
Yeah, so I just thought, let's just deal with five of the strongest rumours in the Premier League right now. Movers and shakers, like the transfer rumours that have failed to go away. Maybe one of them's just really sprung up. But 'tis the season to talk transfers, right? And there's no way I was going to be avoiding the chance to do that today. So I think it'll be quite an open chat, really, mate. It's not like there'll be a bit of insight from me for sure. And I can give you some kind of the probability to where I think these transfers head. But I'm interested actually from you as well, like, because a couple of these players you'll know more about and what the fit would be and whether you would perceive them to happen too. So I think it'll just be a really good chat here where we can all understand a little bit more about the transfer window and what those big Premier League clubs are going to be doing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's very exciting. We're going to mix this up throughout the window. We're going to be having, you know, special podcasts dropping, so they're not all going to be completely transfer related. We're going to have some special transfer rumors podcasts dropping across the main feed and, of course, on our Patreon as well. So if you haven't subscribed, it's a great time to take advantage of that free trial that we have going at the moment. Before we get into all of that, let's do some things we love. What do you got for me?
Mate, I've been pleasantly surprised, as I'm sure all Man United fans were actually, by the fact that Man United have surprised us in a positive way. Well, obviously not if you don't like Man United, but I was sat with Dylan watching the Man United Aston Villa game. And so just to be clear, like, Dylan is 6 years old. He can like whoever he wants. He can watch whatever he wants. I'm not strict. As long as it's not Chelsea, he can basically support whoever he likes. Anyway, he loves Marcus Rashford, right? So he had asked my aunt for a Man United kit with Rashford on the back, and he got the
also,
green
his
kit.
His granddad is a Manchester United
fan. His granddad is a Man United fan, yeah. My dad is a big Man United fan, used to go to all the games. Anyway, and that's the other reason he likes Man United, obviously. But anyway, he got the green Man United kit for Christmas, which, by the way, is a really nice kit. Really nice kit.
Very, very nice.
And so he had it on. And I was like, okay, yep, you can stay up and watch the Man United Villa game. We'll see how it's going at halftime. We might have to go to bed. And normally he knows that I let him stay up for the whole game. Halftime, obviously, is 2-0 to Villa. United are terrible. And I was like, mate, we're going to bed. And he's like, no, Dad, they could turn it around. They could turn it around. Mate, they cannot turn this around. There is no way Man United are turning this around. This is one of the worst performances I've seen. Like, they are so dumb. And I meant dumb in, like, the literal sense, because Aston Villa were so smart to play on their flaws, basically. Like, the way that Bailey got in Onana's ear, I was like, fair play. Like, that is, you have just preyed on a weakness in this team and you've just absolutely exposed it. And I was like, there's no way, mate. So go to take him up to bed, and I obviously watched the second half, and I'm just like, he'll be happy, but he also is going to be really mad at me because he really trusts me in most aspects of life, but especially when it comes to football. Mate, that performance in the second half was just brilliant, and the fact that United have players like Garnacho and Hoyland stepping forward to get them out of a hole. This is what's needed. Like, you think about the comebacks that United have sparked across this season, like that Brentford one, for example. Like, those moments were just about luck. They were about, like, just keep going, plugging along, hopefully something good happens. This felt different.
Yeah.
This was a dominance in the second half. This was two players stepping forward and scoring goals in the manner they're supposed to score goals. Mate, Garnacho reminded me of Ronaldo at times. Like, genuinely, like, his stance and the way that he does things, I'm not saying he's as good as Ronaldo, I'm not saying he can get to that level, but he does have a similar style of play. We know that already, but, like, I thought it was very obvious here in the way that he was playing. And then Hoyland needed that moment, and to get it with such a nice finish was just great. So, yeah, I had to break the news to Dylan in the morning, which... He was like, what? You said they would definitely lose. I was like, mate, if you ever listen to the Patreon, you'll know that my predictions aren't great. So apart from upsetting Dylan and he missed it, I just couldn't believe that Man United had that within them.
I think what was, you know, and to kind of flip your original point on its head, what was nice to see, I think, from a United perspective was that in the second half, they flipped that script and they played on where Villa looked like they could be got at. And obviously that high line was a little bit risky and potentially Emery got that slightly wrong. We haven't said that very much this season, but Villa looked to kind of put the game to bed and to make sure that United couldn't play out, and they left themselves exposed over the top. And Garnacho was the man that took advantage of that. Obviously the first goal ruled out, and then to score twice more, I thought was very, very impressive. And, you know, I was like you at that point. I was like 2-0 up. We could turn this off.
You could have turned it off. I think I bet a lot of people did.
Yeah, 100%. I wouldn't be surprised if there were fans leaving at halftime who just were like, you know what? I've seen enough of this. It's Boxing Day. I could be at home with my family and just strolling back and seeing what's going on. And actually to see the performance in the second half and the kind of worlds apart it was from the performance in the first half was very impressive. And actually, you're right, in terms of the way that it happened and also the players that sparked it, I thought Marcus Rashford was really good in the second half. I thought it was very, very impressive with his off-the-ball movement and the way that he dragged players around. It all just kind of worked. Yeah. And when that occurred, it was like, oh, okay, cool. There's something different going on here to perhaps what we've seen before. Now, whether that's enough to spark a turnaround in United's season, I don't
know. Who knows?
But to beat a Villa side who have been in good form, who have surprised everyone with how well they've done in the Premier League this season, is very, very impressive. And I think that it should be given credit, due credit, for not being, as you say, a lucky turnaround. This was really well executed in terms of a game plan. And that was something we've kind of not seen from United across the course of this season.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously for Hoyland, like he was gone over 1,000 minutes without a Premier League goal. And I'm like, I've actually got to come out with it here and put him into that bracket with Darwin and Nicholas Jackson. I'm going to have to do it. And then he scores that. No chance. I'm not putting him into that bracket. Hoyland's better than both. Now, United have got Forest.
He's just so clearly not better than Darwin. So just so we're clear.
United got Forest away. And then they got Wigan, right? They have to build on this moment over those two matches before they go into that Tottenham fixture. Like this is a real opportunity for them to actually build on a moment. Let's see if they can do it. Who knows? Literally no idea.
No idea whatsoever. You're absolutely right. Okay, I want to talk about, you're talking about people getting exposed. I'm going to talk about exposing myself because I got incredibly spun this morning because Betis, out of nowhere, announced that Joaquin had signed until the end of the season on a short-term contract. Now, Joaquin is 41. He retired at the end of last season to great fanfare. My favourite player ever. And Betis have lacked leadership now this season, and it's all been a bit up and down. We've talked about the results in the Europa League and obviously dropping down into Conference League, but there's also been, you know, moments throughout the season where this team just feels like they're off the pace and rebuilding again. And it was a real disappointment after, you know, some of the highs of the last few years to not been able to really build on that. So I was like, oh, what great signing. And then I realized it was basically the Spanish equivalent of April Fool's Day today. And I'd been done. And I watched a video of him. And also, I was like, it's really weird that they haven't announced any of this on their English language channels. They've only done it on the Spanish ones. And I was like, okay, maybe they're just going to take a while to do so. And instead, it's like they haven't done that because they were like, obviously, that won't translate to our English speaking audience.
I totally understand why you've been done. You would not have been the only one.
Oh, 100%. And I put it on Twitter, been like, the king's back. And then about 10 minutes later, was like, oh, I've been done by Spanish April Fool's Day being on December the 28th. That is so not ideal. But I was really excited because I was like, I don't think he'll play that many minutes, but actually having someone of his ability in the squad and his nous might just be useful in terms of just setting the ship straight with Betis. The good news is Betis have actually signed a player. They signed Johnny Cardoso, who's a USMNT international. He's been playing for Internacional in Brazil and is a defensive midfielder. I think it's a really good move, really smart move. Has been good over his 4 years or so in Brazil. Obviously came through that system and has worked his way into the first team and into the USMNT picture without playing in Europe, which is not necessarily that common these days. Someone out of the eye, you know, you get the occasional squad call-ups which are MLS based, you get the occasional players knocking around in Liga MX, and there's a lot of players in Europe. So for someone to have pushed themselves into that conversation, he's 22 years old, he's a very, very exciting young player, I think, in this USMNT system, but we're talking about trying to dislodge a midfield that involves, you know, Weston McKennie, who is at Juventus, Yunus Musa, who's now at Milan, and obviously Tyler Adams, who's gone to Bournemouth, but has been knocking around, you know, in the top category for quite some time. And there's often discussion about who sits in there. Gio Reyna, obviously, as a 10, changes the picture somewhat in terms of what they're trying to do. But I don't think there's been significant cover for Tyler Adams in the USMNT squad that makes sense. Cardoso could be that player, I think. And I think that this move to Betis, especially with Guido Rodriguez out and for the moment and also linked with a move away, could be a real opportunity for him to stamp his mark on European football and to be like, hang on, I should be in this conversation around the USMNT a little bit more. So a player with a point to prove in a position of weakness for Betis that might have a positive impact on the USMNT. It ticks all the boxes for me. So I was delighted to see this transfer go through. It's been rumoured for a little while now that it was going to happen once the Brazilian season ended. But I'm excited to see what happens here because I think there are opportunities to, you know, to become one of the key facets for Betis quite quickly and to really kind of make his mark on the European game. So yeah, one transfer that didn't happen, one that did. But I'm excited about that one and Johnny Cardoso's ability to, you know, to make it happen. There was also a great announcement video, which they did to kind of a Home Alone theme, where he's just like running around the Via Marine when there's no one in it, winter break. So yeah, enjoyed pretty much all of it, but I'm excited about Cardoso Betis.
Yeah, hopefully it gives you lads an uplift, mate. It's been a bad end to the year, really, results-wise, wasn't it?
Yeah, an uplift that's much needed, I think, in Andalusia. So we shall see. All right, after the break, we're going to be talking transfers. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time to talk some transfers with the guru, Dean Jones. Over to you.
Yes, mate. Here we go. Something like that they've heard them say in the transfer world. The transfer window is going to open. It's the January transfer window. And seeing as we are at the end of December, it's a few days away. So maybe even if you're listening to this, it's open today. So congratulations to you if you are celebrating the opening of the window today.
Happy New Year if you are.
What a marvellous view it is out there as you look at all those transfer targets just waiting to be snapped up. There actually aren't that many pending deals as we go into this window. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure how much big business is going to be done, but there are some big wants and needs that are happening right now. And so I think that there's more than enough for us to address over the course of this episode to whet our appetite for what might be about to come. I'm going to start at number five with a transfer that involves Arsenal. And they are, well, I'll be honest, they're looking at three positions. They're literally looking at the defence, midfield and attack as to whether they could make the most of the strong position they've got themselves in so far across the course of this season. Now, look, last year, I just look at last year as a dress rehearsal for this one. It was like a pretend title challenge to see what it actually takes to challenge for a title. Now, they actually have more capability to put up a fight with City and Liverpool and whoever else wants to get involved in it and actually push them all the way. If they're going to do that, though, they realise that they can't be left short like they probably were last season when you had Rob Holding marking Erling Haaland in an important match at the back end of the season. They can't be doing that this time around. So the defence is actually becoming a priority. Now, obviously, Yuri Timber's injury was a massive blow to them. Tomiyasu's had a blow in terms of injury. And now when he comes back, he's going to go away to the Asia Cup anyway. You see Thomas Partey's filled in at some points at right back and he's been injured anyway. And he's going to go off to AFCON if he's fit enough to do so. So that can't be an option. So I think a defender will come in. And I'm told that if they were to spend money, it would probably go into the defence if they could find the right option. It's very unclear as to how much money Arsenal actually have available to them because they are having to tread very carefully around FFP constraints because of the outlay that they made in the summer on Declan Rice, Kai Havertz, Timber, and the David Raya deal, which, even though it's a loan right now, does turn into a £27 million transfer in the summer. So the man that is being tipped to come into Arsenal as the biggest name defender is Gonçalo Inácio at Sporting. This is a player that has been linked quite a lot with Man United and Liverpool. And only very, very recently has he started to be linked with Arsenal. And to be honest, in some Portuguese press, they're really pressing this home quite hard. Like Arsenal are getting themselves into a good position to actually trigger his release clause, which is over £50 million. I'm not wholly convinced that Arsenal have £50 million. I can't get an answer on it that says yes. I get definite doubts around whether they have it, but so I don't know. But if they could go there, an unbelievable signing. Like, they're obviously, right now, there's also rumours around players like Matthijs de Ligt, but that's not happening right now. Like, there's no way de Ligt's going to Arsenal in January. Maybe further down the line, they won't be looking at that. But if they're seriously on the tail of Inacio, this is a player that you know a lot about, how good a fit is he for where they are right now?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really, really good player. I still, and less and less, but there remain reservations over the fact that he's looked excellent in Sporting system, but they have, you know, exclusively pretty much played with a three at the back. Yeah. So he has had that cover with him. When he stepped into a four in the back situation with Portugal, so far so good as far as we're concerned, but equally most of the tests he's come up against haven't been of the requisite quality to take that as an absolute given. Yeah. So there is definitely still a little bit of a question mark in terms of how well he slots into a four at the back system. But his passing range is absolutely glorious. The way that he carries the ball out of defense, very, very impressive. His defensive capabilities, I don't think, are hugely in question. He's been a mainstay within this team for like a relatively long time now, considering his age. He is a very, very good footballer. And I think that the way that he knocks the ball around and the way that he passes out progressively from the back would suit the way that Arsenal want to play and look to play. I think that the only question mark about this is, does he come in and become first choice straight away? Because if he doesn't, why would he leave? Because he's an absolute mainstay and heart of this Sporting side. He is trying to make sure that he is the first choice centre back when it comes to the Euros next summer for Portugal. To leave right now and to go into a side who have a relatively settled centre-back partnership, yes, okay, Arsenal will look to this and go, if either of these gets injured, we're going to need some cover. Is he better than Gabriel? I don't know. Right now, I don't know. And I think that whilst he probably has the capacity and ceiling to be better than Gabriel in the future, I don't know if he walks into this side and knocks him out of the team, especially when that Saliba-Gabriel pairing has been so solid across the course of this season. Arsenal have been excellent defensively. So that's where I'm sort of a little bit iffy on this one. Not because I don't think that Inacio would fit or that he isn't a very, very good defender. I'd question whether it would be the right move for him right now, especially if he's trying to force his way into Martinez's plans for Portugal for the summer, having 6 months where he plays in cup games and, you know, is sort of a fringe member of the squad, unless there's an injury, probably doesn't benefit him in terms of what his international status is come Euro 2024.
Yeah, so I imagine like long-term Arsenal would be looking for a Saliba partner, but to do that halfway through this season would seem a bit strange to unsettle this lineup. And there is part of me that thinks, hang on, why don't you find a short-term option in here and then fix another problem further up the field with money? We're going to come back to that later in the show because there is more Arsenal to come here, but definitely not ruling out the idea that Arsenal do decide to sign a defender on loan if they can find someone of the right profile that helps them through this season. But very interesting point that is going to be talked about beyond doubt as we get to the first couple of weeks of Jan. At number four, it's a man who is very close to our hearts, Jack. And I'm not talking about Sam Tai. I'm talking about João Palhinha.
Similar height.
Similar height. That is where it ends. Palhinha is the best midfielder in world football. I am absolutely obsessed with this guy's style of play.
Not in his last two games, he hasn't been. I'll give you that.
No, but I mean, he's not, you know, everyone's allowed an off day and he might have had his head turned by the sound of it. But João Palhinha, honestly, like it, I'd be more surprised if every big team in England wasn't trying to sign him, because I would feel like it was a complete oversight in whatever your recruitment is of somebody in that position. But João Palhinha obviously had the opportunity to join Bayern Munich in the summer. It fell through. Fulham couldn't find a replacement in time. deal collapsed. Bayern are still interested. I can't see them signing him in January. But now he is being linked with clubs in England. He's been linked with Chelsea, which I just can't see at all and haven't heard anything around that. Tottenham have been linked. Liverpool have been linked. Even Man City have been linked recently. What is your feeling, Jack, on Palhinha getting through this window and still wearing a Fulham shirt by the time we get to February, or is he poached?
I was pretty confident about a month ago that Palhinha was going to stay until the end of the season. Now, look, I don't begrudge him his shot at the very big time because he's been that good in a Fulham shirt. I thought that if Bayern remained not the only club interested, that's wild, but the only club who was serious about putting things on the table, then my gut feeling was that that would wait until the summer. The newfound, or newfound in inverted commas, interest, and serious interest as it seems, from some of the bigger clubs in the Premier League scares me a little bit. And especially that Liverpool link, which has never really gone away. Liverpool are right in the hunt for, you know, to be in that title race in the Premier League, and will look to solidify their position at the top of the table after, I think, them being, I think it's fair to say, and I think Liverpool fans would agree with me, maybe a year ahead of schedule. We were saying that this Liverpool side might need a year to gel, and then next year they'd be right in the hunt for the title and be serious contenders. They're ahead of pace, right? And as we speak right now, Liverpool are top of the Premier League table. They might not be by the time this podcast goes out, but it is one of those things where you're kind of looking at it and going, okay, suddenly it looks like Liverpool are one or two pieces away from being maybe favourites to land this Premier League title. And at that point, it becomes like, ooh, if Liverpool sign Palhinha, do they immediately become favourites for the Premier League title? Maybe. And so that kind of flip interest, or that kind of desire to make a difference straight away, might just move the needle on this one, as much as it pains me to say it.
There is no way Liverpool are paying £60 million for Palhinha this month.
Well, that's good.
I'd be so surprised. Like, I have checked this with somebody that I know that has good ins at Liverpool, and he says, look, it is being played down. They are linked. They've been linked for the best part of a year now. But the likelihood is this is not a transfer that Liverpool are going to look to do in January, and I hope that that information I got is right, because I too would be most scared of him going to Liverpool, because he just seems like the exact type of player that they should have signed last summer. When they were having that midfield rebuild, they should have signed Palhinha, and they didn't, and I find that very strange. Now it opens the door, obviously, to Chelsea. That's nonsense. Like, Chelsea have got like three versions of this defensive type midfielder already, and probably even four, actually.
That doesn't mean that Chelsea won't do it.
Jao Palhinha,
not meant that. It's not meant that across the course of... We've spoken about this. We've spoken about defensive midfielders. We've spoken about the fact that players haven't necessarily fitted the exact archetype of what they want from that number six. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Chelsea went and signed an out-and-out number six in this window.
But now that Lavia's fit and actually in the... He just played his first game. Like, I can't see how they would do this. Like, I guess you could argue, well, if they sold Conor Gallagher for £50 million, then maybe they could. But I also don't know who's going to sign Conor Gallagher for £50 million. I don't think that that's a good deal. But, yeah, we'll see. But Bayern, they've gone quite quiet on this. I don't think they're coming in January either. So it's in at four because it is a big transfer rumour for January. I'm praying that he doesn't go anywhere, because Fulham really, really need this guy right now. There's obviously talk that we're already trying to replace him because Andre is still set up to come in. And, you know, that deal is quite far down the line.
Good player, different player.
Different player. Like, I like the idea of Fulham signing an Andre while Palhinha is at the club and we start to come to terms with what the future looks like. But that doesn't always work either. Like,
that's Fulham, called squad planning.
Yeah.
Fulham are incredibly bad at it.
Yeah, and even when we do try it in the past, it doesn't work. Like, the player that we brought in just doesn't sit right alongside what you're trying to do. So a very interesting transfer rumour, because this is a player that genuinely would improve all of those teams that I've just talked about. And they are all massive clubs. I haven't even talked about Arsenal in there. Arsenal have also been linked. I don't know
if that makes sense with Declan Rice in there.
I don't think that makes sense either. But the way that he played against them at the Emirates earlier in the season, I can understand why they might not want him playing for any other opponents again. Fulham do actually play against Arsenal at the weekend. So let's see. Maybe he has another stinker just to make sure that Arsenal don't try and sign him.
We'll see. We'll see.
Number three, Jack, as we trawl through these transfers, is a player that is, well, he's been coveted for months by Man United, but suddenly he's wanted by Tottenham. It's Jean-Claire Tadebo at Nice. You've probably all read loads about this player without ever having seen much of him. And that's probably the case for, I honestly reckon, like 70% of the people that listen to Ranks don't tend to watch Nice very closely. And if you don't watch closely, then it's very hard to judge a player because you only see highlights. And when it comes to highlights, you're ultimately looking at the attacking players or the goalkeepers, because the defensive work is usually cut out of highlights packages. Man United have liked him for a long time. Nice are owned by Ineos and Sir Jim Ratcliffe. Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos have just taken 25% stake in Man United. I struggle to see how Tottenham convince Ratcliffe to sell Tadebo to them in this moment, because Man United can't really do this deal right now. I was speaking to somebody yesterday about, like, does this change the plans at Man United for January? Can they accelerate a little bit now on the incomings and maybe get that Tadebo deal done? Because that'd be a massive thing if they could get a really good centre-half to come in Jan, solidify things. They've really played it down. They said, look, the two things that United will focus on first and foremost is the structure of the club and the hierarchy and getting in those important figures at the top of the club in terms of whether it's director of football or sporting director or head of recruitment, whatever their actual titles are going to be. And then they'll move people around. They'll probably get rid of a couple too. And then they'll also look to get rid of players. Like, they've already got Van der Beek out of the club. They obviously need to get rid of Jadon Sancho, possibly get rid of Anthony Martial. And there are a couple of others too that they're trying to get out of the door. Maybe they can do something at the end of the window, but it's not really seeming likely. And that's where Tottenham sense there might be an opportunity here, because I understand the initial contact around this was with people on Tadebo's side of things rather than with Nice. And they believe that Tadebo is interested in this transfer. I mean, of course he would be. Why would Tadebo not be interested in the idea of going to join a Premier League club that is showing real interest and are run by this Ange Postecoglou model that looks really exciting to be part of? So I can see exactly why he'd be interested. I just struggle to believe that it will be pushed through fast enough that Tottenham are happy, because Tottenham want a centre-half to arrive by mid-Jan, ideally. They really don't want this being dragged out across the whole month. They want to know very quickly whether they can get Tadebo. And if they can't, they've got a list of like five or six fullback, no, not fullbacks as in right backs, fullback options that they would look upon. So, yeah, what would your thoughts be, mate, on Tadebo staying now, going in the summer, and which club you think would be the best fit?
Yeah, he's a player I really like. He's still 23 years old, which is a bit mad because he seems to have had this sort of nomadic career in football already. He broke through at 17 at Toulouse, and after about 10 appearances, Barcelona snapped him up on a free transfer. I wrote some bits on Manchester United targets in the summer for Football Whispers, and at that point I said that it made lots of sense as a kind of long-term replacement for Raphael Varane, someone who's going to step in there, you know, as a countryman and be able to be an option for United for the long term or the long haul. But I do really like the idea of him in this Tottenham side. He's a really aggressive front foot defender. And I think to kind of get the vibe of the kind of player he is, you have to understand his relationship with his centre-back partner at Nice, who's Dante, who's been around for donkey's years.
Yes, literally 40, isn't it?
I believe he's 40, yeah. He has been knocking about and at the top level for a long, long time. And the way that they interact, their partnership is based on the fact that Todibo is the man who springs off his line, pressures attackers and steps into midfield in order to make interceptions, whilst Dante cleans up behind him at the back as a kind of sweeper. And that kind of front foot defending, that aggression in there, makes Todibo, I think, an interesting target for Tottenham, and someone who, when you look at what Christian Romero brings to the team, but obviously Christian Romero is now out for a while, would probably make sense in this Ange Postecoglou setup. Now, I think he fits both teams because he's such a proactive, ball-winning defender, and there is that element you go, okay, if you can get that right and find the partnership, and I would trust that both probably would do that, then actually it makes lots of sense for everybody to be looking for Todibo, because, you know, it hasn't been easy for him. And I think that there's something about being a little bit battle hardened at this point when you step in to a team who want to be upwardly mobile. And Tottenham and Manchester United both fit into that bracket, I think. You're signing someone who's already done the hard yards, because the opportunities in Barcelona were incredibly limited for him. He went off on loan to Schalke, which went pretty well. He went off on loan to Benfica, which went dreadfully. And then he went on loan to Nice, who then made that deal permanent. I think it was around 8.5 million euros when he originally signed for Nice. So whatever happens, Nice going to make a tidy little profit on Todibo. And I think his profile makes sense in the Premier League. I think that he is one of those players that translates really well. Liga tends to translate nicely to the Premier League. It's one of those leagues that tends to land when players sign, especially defenders from Liga. So yeah, there's that. There's also this element of he almost certainly also wants to be at the Euros. And I know I talked about this with Inacio. It's another thing because France's centre-back depth is so strong. So strong. So to be in with a shot, and I think he got his first France call-up in March of this year and has been in and around the squad since. He can't afford to be missing game time. Equally, he can't afford to pass up opportunities to maybe make a little step up and, you know, basically stamp his claim on being like, I need to be in this squad. So I think it's a really interesting one. I think he's an incredibly interesting option for both teams. I'd love to see him under an Ange Postecoglou model, as you say. But in terms of long-term options and who's where, actually, as that successor to Raphael Varane, that might be the place where he actually gets the most joy in the long haul.
Yeah, a big decision, because if Tottenham are actually putting something in front of him right now, and United are like, we can't do that right now, but we will be back. You've got to make that call. Can you wait? Is that opportunity going to pass by? Anything can happen during that 5-6 month period of waiting. United could move on from you. You could suffer a loss of form. You could suffer an injury. That chance might never come back. So it's a really sticky situation. And something we haven't even addressed is the fact that Nice won't want to lose him because they're having an amazing season.
Yeah.
The defence is like the foundation of it. Yeah, they've conceded 9 goals in 17 games in Ligue 1, and they went on that ridiculous run. What was it in the end? 7-8 games without conceding a goal?
Yeah.
It was crazy. So he is the bedrock, like you say, of that. So there's a lot of reasons why this would drag on, and that's going to be the big problem for Tottenham to contend with as we get towards deciding whether this is the guy they want to sign. Now, if they don't, just to outline some of the options that Spurs have also looked at here, at Genoa, there's Radu Dragusin. I don't know if I've pronounced that right or wrong. That either way, he is the guy that they're looking at. And I would say that him and Todibo are the two top targets. That's the way it's kind of been spelled out to me. And they've had other players that they've looked at in like a lot of detail across the course of the last 6 months or year, even for some of them. Ben Godfrey at Everton is a player that they thought might become available, so they've had eyes on him. Lloyd Kelly at Bournemouth. Tosin at Fulham is a player that they've had eyes on for a while. And now that he's
6 months of his contract, yeah.
Yeah, now that he's looking like he might push for a move, then that could come back onto the agenda. At Benfica, there's Barato, who they've had an eye on. So there are other players that they could still turn to here, Tottenham. one thing for sure, they will sign a centre-back. And then in the summer, they'll also sign another centre-back.
Well, that's it. Lots of defensive reinforcements coming in for Ange Postecoglou. I think, DJ, we'll take a break there. And then after the break, we'll talk about the top two rumours that you have left in the tank. Stick with us. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Jack Collins here with Dean Jones discussing some of the big rumours in the Premier League ahead of the transfer window opening in a few days. We've done three. We've got two left to go. What's left, DJ?
Everybody's sitting in their cars or they're sat at work or on the train and they're thinking there's no way that he's not going to talk about Calvin Phillips. It's all we've been hearing about on any transfer gossip column for the last 2 months, how Calvin Phillips has to leave Manchester City. And sure enough, we are now going to talk at number two about Calvin Phillips because he is available for transfer and Man City just want to make sure that they get the right terms or the best terms that they can as to him leaving. The very likely thing to happen is that he goes on loan. The preferable thing for Man City would be that it's a loan with an obligation to be bought in the summer. Now, Newcastle United and Juventus are the two clubs heading the queue here. Juventus
actually desperate to play in black and white stripes.
Like, he is destined to play in black and white stripes, it seems. That's for sure. So think of another team who wear black and white. They might yet be coming in.
Notts County.
Notts County, maybe.
Udinese. But
as it stands right now, Newcastle readying their move. Juventus already starting to get their talks with intermediaries in place to understand exactly what will be needed. For Calvin Phillips, it's a case of deciding exactly what he wants. Now, I'm told that he would prefer to remain within the Premier League, and actually Newcastle would be his top choice destination. Obviously, makes a lot of sense given the fact that Newcastle are going to be up the top end of the Premier League. They are going to be a team where it's much easier to discover exactly where your playing levels are at right now. You know, you can obviously make that comparison to Serie A, but you've got the whole bedding in time. Like, so you're going to be looking at his performances. And if his performance straight away wasn't optimal at Juventus, you'd be like, okay, but he's got to settle into a new environment, new language, new everything. And so it'd be very hard to judge for Gareth Southgate, because the obvious reason thing on Calvin Phillips' mind is being in the England team in the summer. The other two teams that are interested here are Crystal Palace and West Ham. And while I don't think either of those are going to be like dream destinations for Calvin Phillips, they could both become interesting in different ways. I think Crystal Palace, you know what you're getting. And for Calvin Phillips, you know you're going to be playing every single week. Check Nakore out for the rest of this season. They've got the spot. They're looking for a loan to fill it because they don't want to spend any money. Crystal Palace are interested. They wouldn't do that permanent thing. And obviously you wouldn't expect Calvin Phillips to necessarily want to join Crystal Palace permanently. West Ham probably would do the permanent thing if they could get that far along with talks. But Newcastle are basically going to get first dibs on this. They haven't yet actually made any firm move as we're recording this right now. But Eddie Howe, big admirer of Calvin Phillips. And I think that the relationship that you can imagine forging with a manager like that, you could understand why Calvin Phillips would be thinking, that is exactly what I need right now. Like, make me feel like I belong. Make me the heartbeat of your team. I will carry out that task that you want from me in the center of that field perfectly. And Newcastle obviously don't really want to go spending money right now. Like, they've got a temptation to go and get another defender. There's a temptation to go and sign an attacker too. They've got to be really careful because they know that out of everyone in this league, they are being watched over to make sure that they do not overspend right now because they have the most potential to do so. So Calvin Phillips likely to be playing in black and white, certainly by the end of January, probably quite early in January, to be honest, to just get this sorted out. But the fine details of that move are going to determine exactly where he goes and whether anyone could agree to pay the money, which is going to be close to £50 million, to actually take Calvin Phillips long term.
Yeah, it's a weird one because there's an extra addition to this in that Calvin Phillips announced on Boxing Day that he'd just had a baby. So whether he wants to move you know, across the continent at this exact point probably needs to be taken into account. Now, I know that there are things that make this easier for a footballer, that they have the capacity to bring people in to help with that, et cetera, but a newborn might affect exactly where Calvin Phillips wants to go with this one. And a move to Newcastle doesn't feel that far away compared to a move to Turin, for example. And I wonder if that just plays a factor in this. And maybe it's something that's under-considered, or maybe I'm making too much of it. But I think it's worth putting it in the conversation that him wanting to stay within England and have that support network around him after just having a child might be something worth considering. So
yeah,
no, I think that it makes sense. The Newcastle move makes sense across pretty much every facet. Obviously, Sandro Tonali out for the season. We know that Newcastle have been absolutely run ragged on depth, especially in that midfield. And look, there have been beneficiaries. Lewis Miley has emerged as, you know, a serious talent. But equally, I think that a little bit more depth in there is something that Eddie Howe is crying out for right now in this Newcastle team, in terms of having that profile and making sure that he's still right within Gareth Southgate's plans for Euro 2024. It's the move that makes the most sense for me, because I think that, you know, as you say, there are big opportunities for someone to come in and start at Newcastle, considering the depth of their injury crisis. There's more profile to that move than there is at Crystal Palace right now, who feel like they are maybe quietly being sucked into the relegation battle after some, you know, decent performances and dismal results, is probably how I would put it. There have been some bad performances in there as well, but, you know, across the course of this, it's not all been negative for Palace. You're right in that I think that's a guaranteed starting spot, perhaps more than it is at Newcastle. But if he does work his way in and start for the rest of the season for this Newcastle side, and you'd imagine a player who, you know, has the ability of Calvin Phillips, whilst they might not be the right fit for this Manchester City side and it hasn't quite worked out, it might be something that allows him to just rediscover that form that made him a £50 million player when he was at Leeds. So, yeah, it is an interesting one. I would say that if I was going to make a prediction, it would be that he does end up at Newcastle United in this transfer window.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he didn't, that's for sure. So that one should be progressing pretty fast, I would imagine, unless there's a spanner thrown into the works. At number one, again, a player that has been talked about for months, despite the fact he hasn't actually been playing football for a long time. It's Ivan Toney of Brentford. He has been talked about as a transfer option for Chelsea. And he's also talked about as a target for Arsenal right now. Ivan Toney, 27 years old, obviously been serving a betting ban. So he's been sat on the sidelines trying to keep himself fit, keep himself competitive, ready for a return in mid-Jan to action. Brentford don't want to sell the player, but would sell the player at the right fee. I'm told it will take £60 million, possibly even more, to do this deal. I think there's a big temptation for Arsenal to go for him here. And it'll be very interesting to see if they can find a way to make it work. If Arsenal are going to put together this title challenge, then I think they need a really reliable source of goals to come through. And the decision comes down to this, because I was speaking to someone the other day. I said, what do you think about the Ivan Toney rumour? He said, look, they are 100% interested in the player. They didn't think he would cost as much as he's actually going to cost. In fact, they thought they might even get him for under 50 when they first started showing interest in him at the back end of last season. But that's clearly wrong. So then you've got to make a decision. Okay, how can we get to the levels to afford him? And what happens to somebody like Eddie Nketiah? I'll be honest, I'm going to be pretty ruthless. I would sell Eddie Nketiah and I would buy Ivan Toney. I think you just have to move on from it. Ivan Toney's goal scoring rate in the Premier League is really strong. In 68 Premier League appearances, he's got 32 goals and 9 assists playing for Brentford. Like, that's a really, really good return. If you could get him into a top Premier League team, there's every reason to believe that he could continue to do it. Obviously, you don't know. There's no guarantees. But If Arsenal come up short this season because they haven't got that number nine, I think they'll be kicking themselves because you might never get this opportunity again. I just feel it's going to be so tempting. Chelsea's interest does seem to have waned a little bit on this one. Like, people have been playing it up for months, and in the last few weeks, I've just got the impression they're not actually going to go for him. So we'll have to see. I could be wrong. But either way, even Ivan Toney himself keeps playing up this Arsenal thing. He's talked about them in interviews. He's liked a couple of things that they've done on social media. I think he wants it. And I don't think he would be doing those things if he didn't feel like the possibility of it happening was actually real. So what do you reckon, Jack? Like, is this a good signing? Or am I, like, getting a bit carried away? Like, could this act... Because this sounds stupid. Could Ivan Toney win the Premier League for Arsenal? They haven't won it since 2004. I'm waiting a long time here. Is Ivan Toney one of the missing pieces to get in there?
I think it's maybe a little bit premature to suggest that a player who's been out for 8 months could come in, hit the ground running and be the difference maker. Mm-hmm. But I do like him as a profile for this Arsenal side. I like what he does out of possession. I really like his ability to drop deep and link play. He gives something different as an option because we've seen that ability to win those flick-ons and bring others into play for Brentford. And actually, it was something that maybe is a little bit underrated in Ivan Toney's game. The fact that those physical aerial duels, which brought in players like Mbeumo and Visa last season, you know, those flick-ons and ability to basically break down a team's defence with a singular flick from a longer pass is actually something that Arsenal maybe lack a little bit of. You know, obviously they have Gabby Jesus who can come in and make things happen in the final third with his link-up play. They haven't got that ability to go a little bit more direct. And I think Toney brings that to the party. He obviously has a great goal-scoring record, as you put it. But actually, I think he fits the profile of this Arsenal squad a little bit better than he fits the profile of this Chelsea squad, especially with Nkunku coming back from injury now and also wanting to occupy that central zone. What I will say is that to be a success at Chelsea as a number nine, it feels like you have to have this arrogance about you. And I say that in a positive way. Yeah. You have to have that almost unshakable confidence that nothing is going to go wrong. And you look at the players who have succeeded in that number nine spot at Chelsea, Diego Costa, Didier Drogba. They're players who came in and were like, I couldn't care less what you think about me. I'm going to go and do it. And actually, I think Toney is that kind of player who actually would relish the idea of being like, oh, everyone says I'm going to fail. I'm not going to fail. And I think that, you know, obviously it's difficult at Chelsea, especially them being in this sort of transition period. I think his attitude is perfect for that Chelsea number nine role. But I think his style of play is actually slightly better suited to the way that Arsenal build up. So I think it'd be very, very interesting either way. But there's a lot to like about this move from both teams. I would say that I remain a little bit skeptical of the fact that he's going to suddenly come in and be exactly the player that he was last season, having been out of the game for so long and not being able to play at that very top level. I think it will take a little bit of time to shake off the ring rust. Yeah. But, you know, you look at the way that these things have panned out. And I think that of all people and who have that kind of innate confidence in their own ability to get to the very, very top, Ivan Toney's right up there in that conversation. Yeah. And look, when Newcastle sold him off to Peterborough United, I don't think anyone was thinking that this was the future that they had in mind. But here we are.
I guess my only reservation about him going to Arsenal is that they won't just pay whatever it takes to get him. That doesn't seem to be... I know they did on Declan Rice. They eventually caved and went 105 million to West Ham. Don't feel like this is the same. So once it does get over 60 million, I'm not sure how far they would push it. Can you imagine Arsenal spending 80 million pounds on Ivan Toney?
No, I can't.
Would you level it out at 70 million? Is there value to be at that price point? I think that's the top of it. I think you're topping out at £70 million for Ivan Toney. When you consider like what other clubs have spent, I think it probably doesn't sound too bad when you think of what Liverpool spent on Darwin, when you think of what Man United have spent on Rasmus Højlund. It doesn't sound too bad. But I don't think that that's how you gauge success in the transfer market, by comparing yourself to signing those two players. And I don't think Arsenal will put themselves at risk in that sense either, based on the success that they've had up to here.
Also, think of the age profiles with Hoyland and Darwin. There's so much scope for growth. Tony's 27, right? So it's not like he'll be 28 in March. So and he's had, you know, a long career already, working his way up from, you know, that position at Peterborough and getting his way through Ligue 1, the Championship, into the Premier League, showing he's, you know, got that worth, taking 8 months out at this point. Now, that might, you know, stretch his longevity by a little bit, but you can't imagine he's going to have more than 3-4 years more at the top level. So the difference between a Darwin and a Hoyland there is that there's probably less sell-on value. So yeah. I agree in terms of, obviously, you have to pay for that experience and nous, and we talk about it, and you know, that ability to have proved yourself in the Premier League and not be taking a risk. And so therefore Brentford are well within their rights to demand, well, whatever they want. They've stuck with him through this period. Yeah. And I think that if someone had decided they wanted to buy him in the summer and they were like, we're going to take the hit on him early and we'll deal with the 6-month suspension, then maybe Brentford would have been more amenable. But they've coached him through this. They've brought him back to fitness. You know, Phil Giles is a savvy operator. And look, he, as you say, when Brentford are given the right money, or what they believe to be the right money for a player, they sell them and they reinvest that money, usually pretty wisely. But there's also the kind of caveat that Brentford are struggling with injuries and suspensions. They are sliding a little bit towards that relegation place and that kind of battle to stay up. Selling a player who guarantees, in inverted commas, we don't know what he's going to be like after the break, but, you know, who has performed for them and scored those important goals over the last few years, is a risk for Brentford at this point. So the money's going to have to be right. And I don't know exactly what the figure it takes. And obviously they'll want to encourage a bidding war. So they'll, if one team comes in, then I'm sure that, you know, Phil Giles will be there going, well, Chelsea, Arsenal have put the money on the table. What have you got to offer? Whether that then spins the battle out of Arsenal's control or not is maybe a different question. But it's definitely interesting to see what they do here. And of all the clubs, maybe Brighton aside, I trust Brentford to get the right fee, or what they want as the right fee, for Tony. And whether Arsenal have the money to do that right now or not is probably a slightly different question.
Yeah, totally. What did we get for Mitrovic in the end? 52, 53. So from a Brentford point of view, I could totally understand why they'd be saying, no, we want £80 million for Ivan Toney. But I think you would be looking at deals like that one and being like, well, I think we're probably getting a little bit carried away here, and that £60, £65 million might be a little bit more reasonable for us to have discussions around. We'll see. But certainly Ivan Toney is going to be probably the biggest talking point as we get into this January window, mate, because people want him, and I've got a feeling he's got itchy feet.
Maybe. Might be one for the summer, but I think that there is definitely going to be some significant moves made in this.
Yeah, I think we'll do more of these, mate. I think across January, our plan will be to rank the rumours of the week. Let's try something like that. It'll be like the quick ranks that we did. It won't be a full hour, but I think let's aim to do a weekly show that we add to our
rotation,
little portfolio. Yeah, and I'll aim to rank the best rumours of each week. I'll probably throw in a funny one here and there each week just to for us to laugh about. But yeah, I think we'll try and keep a grip on all of this across Jan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to our Chancellor Guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Oh, thanks, mate. It's our last main show of the year. Thanks everybody that's listened across 2023. We have got one more show to go out on Patreon. So we've got to record that, haven't we, mate? But apart from that, we are heading into 2024. So thanks everyone for supporting us across the year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening. As ever, I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. This has been the final Ranks FC main show of 2023. Thank you for all of your support, all of your listens across the course of this year. Plenty more excitement as we head into 2024. Have a happy new year. Enjoy the celebrations as we tick into another annum for us to enjoy, and another football year, which I imagine is going to be very, very special. Take it easy, gang. Happy New Year. Peace.